Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Imagine a 45-year-old male presents to your office with a blood pressure of 160 over 94, LDL cholesterol of 166, and smokes 1.5 packs per day. Imagine in this scenario that you don't treat the blood pressure, lipids, or address smoking cessation. Instead, you wait until the patient develops multivessel coronary artery disease, at which time he's referred to a cardiothoracic surgeon who performs multivessel bypass, then manages the patient after surgery. Of course, that scenario is ridiculous, yet it's analogous to how we treat obesity in the current healthcare environment. A patient's obesity is ignored until the disease is very advanced and possibly referred for bariatric surgery, after which care is managed by a bariatric surgeon. There needs to be a shift in healthcare where there's a similar continuum of care in obesity treatment that we see with cardiovascular disease, where patients receive early obesity care at lower BMIs, with more complicated patients being referred to obesity medicine specialists, and if they're not responsive to intensive obesity treatment intervention, referred to a bariatric surgeon. Hi, I'm Dr. Nick Pennings, Chair of Family Medicine at the Campbell University School of Osteopathic Medicine and Executive Director of Clinical Education for the OMA. With me today is Kirsten Fredrickson, MD. Dr. Fredrickson is a presenter at the 2024 OMA Annual Obesity Summit in Denver, Colorado, in conjunction with three of her colleagues in a lecture titled, We All Win, Combining Medical and Surgical Obesity Care. Kirsten, tell us about yourself.
Well, thank you for having me, Dr. Pennings. So I am a board-certified internist. I've been an internist for many years. I worked both in the outpatient setting, inpatient setting, and became board-certified in obesity medicine about 11 years ago. And I've been active in the OMA ever since that time and was part of the committee that we're on that presented yesterday, which is the Metabolic Bariatric Surgery Committee. So essentially, it's a combination of providers who are metabolically, surgically oriented, and then those who are more in the obesity medicine space but work a lot with bariatric surgeons or perhaps GI endoscopists who are doing bariatric type procedures. And so we're putting our minds together as part of this committee to provide content for the OMA and members about what we do and how what we do can further their goals and understand treatment options that maybe they're not used to encountering. So I'm currently the chair of that committee this year, and we've been active with this committee since 2020, so it's been really exciting to see it grow. And this year we have a nice combination of members who are so there are several bariatric surgeons on our committee. There are some physicians. There are some APPs. And we have a PhD nutrition specialist who is quite active in the research space, so really nice combination. And our mission yesterday as part of our talk was to bring together some points that we find really important as we transmit what we know out to the broader OMA population about medical care in the bariatric surgery setting.
So it sounds like you really have a dynamic interprofessional group within this committee, and that an interdisciplinary group also seems to be a very powerful combination for the care of obesity treatment. But what about when obesity, It sounds like you have a really nice interdisciplinary group, and I think that is a very powerful tool in treating patients with obesity. But what about situations where providers don't have access to a group like that, where they're not able to be able to refer to a group, an interdisciplinary group like yours? What should primary care providers be doing to treat obesity early on?
Right, so this is a great question, and I think it really comes back to what are the standards of care in obesity medicine, and how do we transmit that information to everyone who is taking care of patients? We know that this epidemic of obesity is really hitting all of our patients. I mean, we'll have 75% of the adult population in this country affected by overweight or obesity in the next few years, and the pediatric population is also experiencing trends in this direction. So we really need to impart our information to the primary care provider, have a lot of collaboration so that they understand what to do when they encounter patients who are suffering from overweight and obesity. So the first thing I would say would be to go back to some of the standards of care, which are first, essentially one thing that has been said during this conference is treat or refer. But to understand how to treat, you have to identify those patients. So the first thing is screening for all adults. So I'm coming from the adult medicine world, so I'm sort of focused on that. But in general, screening really all patients for overweight and obesity, that's the first thing. Identifying the problem and then understanding if there are coexisting conditions that also need to be addressed as part of this treatment of overweight and obesity. And then the next step from that would be understanding the severity of the disease and starting treatment options. So, and we can talk about medication and so on from there, but I think the first point of understanding is really at the level of the primary care physician, screening, right. Understanding and screening.
Recognizing the disease.
Exactly.
Beginning the discussion with patients and hopefully initiating treatment, feeling comfortable to be able to start either lifestyle interventions or medications or both. But that's really what we need early on with so many people having obesity. It's so important that care begins in the primary care office.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But over time, you can come to a limit of your skill set and abilities to be able to treat obesity. So what are some of the options then that primary care providers should consider when they're feeling like they're at their limit of care for obesity treatment?
Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is, it's also a great question. And I think it comes back to that discussion that these specialists should be having on a regular basis with the primary care provider so that for example, in a community, those who would get the patients referred to them have that dialogue about whom they'd want to treat. So in some communities, it might be we're ready to embrace patients much sooner, and others, specialty providers in obesity care may be very overwhelmed. And so they may push back a little bit and say, try more aggressive medical therapy. For example, you've tried lifestyle intervention, that's not quite working. Let's be really aggressive at the PCP level with the more highly effective anti-obesity medications, and then we'll see them as we get towards bariatric surgery because we really don't have obesity medicine providers in our community, for example. Or we have a lot of resources for obesity medicine, and if you're feeling overwhelmed as the PCP, we're happy to embrace them, those patients, sooner and get them back to you when we've got them more stabilized.
So part of the discussion in the lecture that you presented talked about different models of care in terms of interdisciplinary groups or different models of care of interaction between primary care and obesity medicine treatment specialists. What are those different models?
Yeah, so there are three that we talked about, and I would say there's not really a right or wrong. I think it, again, really depends on the environment and the providers as to which will work best. But the three that we identified and that we've experienced collectively as a group on our committee are those obesity medicine and bariatric surgery practices which are completely independent. They refer back and forth and collaborate, but they're not physically in the same space and they don't really share the same patients often. So they may refer, but they're not actually seeing those patients in real time together. And then you have the shared practice where you have a parallel path within that shared practice. So they're under the same umbrella, but their patients are either seeing the obesity medicine providers or they're seeing bariatric surgery, and they could be referred to either one of those directly from the PCP. And then the third model is where you have the shared practice and there's one entry point and the patient typically is seeing obesity medicine first and then seeing the metabolic bariatric surgery provider second, because they're usually overwhelmed and in the OR and not able to see patients in the clinic as readily.
So if somebody has been building their experience with obesity medicine and maybe they're in primary care and looking to shift totally to obesity medicine, would you advise somebody to look for what path they should follow in terms of setting up an obesity medicine practice?
Yeah. And so I've followed two of these pathways. I've had the experience of working in a completely independent obesity medicine practice with a lot of cross referrals to independent bariatric surgeons. And I've had the experience of working in a health system where I was part of a metabolic bariatric surgery practice, but we did not really share patients too much unless patients failed medical treatment. They went to bariatric surgery or vice versa. They had weight regain after bariatric surgery. So I think the second scenario that I was in, I was invited by the bariatric surgeons to start that obesity medicine practice, and those surgeons really embraced us, and I trained an APP, so nurse practitioner, and I ran that program together, and within a year, we had a second site. It was a very robust program, much supported by the surgeons, and that worked very well, and patients were not delayed to go to bariatric surgery by seeing us, so that worked well. They didn't feel any significant competition from us. And so I think it's really understanding if the bariatric surgeons are there and established and they invite you to join, then that's usually a good sign you have a champion for what you do as an obesity medicine provider. Other systems are very different and they don't necessarily champion the obesity medicine physician. They champion the surgery and think a lot about the money coming in from those and don't think about the bigger comprehensive picture.
So which practice scenario did you like the most and why?
There are pluses and minuses to both, absolutely. And I would say that you have a little bit more control over the obesity medicine side of your practice. If you're independent, of course, you can really train the staff as needed for your medicine patients. And they're not focused maybe half the time on the surgical patient and their different needs of those. But then on the other hand, you have to find the resources yourself for your entire practice, and the overhead is really on you. Whereas if you're sharing a practice with with the metabolic bariatric surgery physicians or surgeons, then you have not only shared patients sometimes, but you also have shared staff. The overhead may be less. Maybe you're sharing exam rooms. In the morning, you're in that room. In the afternoon, they're seeing patients in that room. So it's a lot more efficient in terms of overhead and staffing, and a lot easier cross-collaboration and referral if you're together. So I think I liked being with the surgeons in the same space quite a bit. It just felt more dynamic. And as patient issues came up, we could immediately discuss them and just come up with answers in real time as opposed to waiting for them to be seen somewhere else, and getting that paperwork back and forth would take a lot longer and there was a lag.
That sounds very interesting. So when you have an interdisciplinary group or a larger group, part of that can be included with the ASMBS Center of Excellence. What are the qualifications needed to be recognized as a Center of Excellence?
So in 2019, the American Society for Metabolic Bariatric Surgery gave a possibility for the designation of obesity medicine directorship under this umbrella of the Centers of Excellence for those programs that wanted to add an obesity medicine director. And so that obesity medicine director could either be a surgeon or a physician practicing obesity medicine, and that person is responsible for the obesity medicine program, development, and quality. And part of the annual review of the metabolic bariatric surgery practice is one of the duties as well. So those are the two main functions, and of course they're seeing patients actively as part of that. In terms of the quality parameters, so the protocols are standardized, there's training and there's data collection as there is with the bariatric surgery program, but it's a little more loosely defined what data points are required for the obesity medicine program. So there's somebody designated to help capture those data points, but it's not quite typically as supported. As with, sometimes it's hard to find somebody who is designated time to collect those data, and that can be a challenge. But then this, there is a tracker available that the ASMBS provides that allows you to fairly quickly go through with each patient those points that you want to follow. Often the EMRs don't really allow that tracking within their EMR, so it's a little bit cumbersome to capture the data. So that's something to be aware of if people are considering doing that, to have somebody available at least part of the time to capture data. And what are the data points? So some of the initial vital signs are important, but primarily vital signs, meaning like height, weight, BMI, percent body fat. So vital signs in our world are not necessarily blood pressure, although that's important, but we're thinking about percent body fat and BMI and so on. And then any change in coexisting conditions, like a change in A1C or lipids, and one can define those labs that one would want to track early on and then not track everything, but track a few data points and look for improvement over time. And then medication use, side effects, complications are tracked as well. And that's primarily what is monitored there.
So what are the benefits to patient care for having a center of excellence?
So it's, you know, we don't have a lot of data on that right now. This is a fairly new program. So it's about 5 years old. I think those data points are starting to come in. I think the fact that it's a more comprehensive program will provide this continuity for patients, and I think we'll be seeing better outcomes. But again, we don't really have the data right now to say for sure. So hopefully they see one entry point, a patient will see one entry point, the referring provider sees an entry point, it's easier for everyone to identify where they need to go for the specialty care, and then that will help improve outcomes as that center has higher volumes and, you know, has quality measures that they're tracking. And
it seems like an awful lot of work, though, to be able to do that. Is it recognized as a value-added service? Is reimbursement any better for centers of excellence?
Not at this time, no. So it's, we don't know whether insurance will find a good payoff from their perspective. And, yeah, we really don't know. So it is a lot of work for those centers that do it. And what I've heard from a number of sites is that they identify somebody to collect the data, and then all of a sudden that person is sent off to do something else and data collection becomes a challenge. And not necessarily on the surgical side, but for the obesity medicine side. And so that...
Yeah, when it's not compensated, it's hard to maintain it as a priority.
Right, right.
Yeah, it sounds like a challenge. It sounds like a wonderful idea, but unfortunately,
yeah,
it's hard to sustain without improved reimbursement.
Right.
Well, it's been an interesting discussion. One of the questions I'd like to ask, though, is when discussing obesity treatment with other healthcare providers, what's your favorite bit of advice?
I really love the concept of treating obesity first. And I think that the more we recognize how pivotal this disease is and improvement of this disease can impact so many other coexisting conditions, that if providers who are frustrated by all the different metabolic issues a patient has, if they can focus on treating obesity, not only is the patient so incredibly grateful, which makes this, for me, a joy to do because patients are so grateful, but it helps the providers in treating many of the patient's coexisting conditions. And so it's really rewarding on many fronts. And so that's what I would say is the most exciting thing for me, and to recognize that, and knowing it does take a lot of time to do those things, but really targeting obesity first can help the broader and have happier patients, I find.
It is true. I always call obesity medicine happy medicine because patients are happy. They're very grateful for the work that you do. And I love that expression, treat obesity first, because I think that has to be the focus of medicine, because it really does get to the underlying cause of so many diseases: diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obstructive sleep apnea, osteoarthritis, all these things that are driven by obesity. So treating obesity really does treat all those diseases and makes, I think, patient care much better and makes practicing medicine much happier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find it really gratifying.
Well, thank you, Kirsten. You can find Dr. Fredrickson's conference lecture, We All Win, Combining Medical and Surgical Obesity Care in the OMA Academy. Well, where else can our listeners learn more about your work?
So one thing that our committee is working on is putting out some practical guidelines for OMA members that are talking on some of the points that we touched on today. How do you start an obesity medicine practice as part of a bariatric surgery practice, or how do you think about collaboration with bariatric surgeons if you're on the obesity medicine side? Also, how do you let the health system know what you're doing and why, and making your case for why this kind of program is important? So we'll be putting out some of those documents this year following this conference. We'll be putting out one pretty soon in the next month or two. And so through the OMA, that will be available and will be a great resource, I think, for the members.
Sounds like a great resource. Thank you for all your hard work on that.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being with us today. If you like this podcast, Obesity Disease, please share it with a friend and help the OMA as we strive to advance clinician understanding of the disease of obesity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Obesity, a Disease. For more information about obesity medicine podcasts and other valuable resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen regularly, head over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and leave us a much appreciated review. The views expressed in this episode are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please join us again for our next episode of Obesity, a Disease.